Momentan sieht es ja gerade ein bisschen anders aus, aber die zweite Hälfte des letzten Jahrzehnts waren für die Sportmarke Adidas ein einziger Homerun. Der Konzern aus Herzogenaurach kooperierte damals mit Stars wie Pharrell Williams und Beyoncé, lancierte zusammen mit der Umweltschutzorganisation Parley for the Oceans den legendären Parley-Schuh und versprach, bis 2024 komplett auf Recycling-Polyester umzustellen. Ergebnis? In diesen glücklicheren Tagen wuchs Adidas Jahr für Jahr zweistellig. Zu verdanken hat dies die Marke dies ganz wesentlich dem Mann, der heute bei uns zu Gast ist. Eric Liedtke verantwortete als globaler Markenchef von 2014 bis 2019 Produktdesign, Innovation, Nachhaltigkeit und Markenmanagement des 20-Milliarden-Konzerns. In dieser Zeit holte er unter anderem Kanye West an Bord, schloss die Partnerschaft mit Parley for the Oceans und überredete den Vorstand zum Wahnsinnsprojekt Umstellung auf Recyclingplastik. Im Gespräch wird uns gleich erklären, welche Dynamik das Recycling-Ziel bei Adidas auslöste und warum es auch im Rückblick kein Fehler war, Kanye West unter Vertrag zu nehmen. Unser Gespräch wird Eric übrigens von Portland ausführen, wo er mit seiner deutschen Frau und den zwei Kindern lebt. Vor 2 Jahren hat Eric dort ein Startup gegründet, mit dem er, wie er sagt, Chaos stiften will. Unless Collective heißt die 10-mitarbeitende Firma. Sie produziert Sweatshirts, Hemden und Schuhe komplett aus pflanzlichen Materialien, was bedeutet, dass man sie am Ende ihres Lebens einfach auf den Kompost schmeißen kann. Mit diesem Ansatz will der 56-Jährige helfen, das gigantische Müllproblem der Branche zu lösen. Sein Ziel? Für die Bekleidungsindustrie ein ähnlicher Disruptor zu werden, wie es Elon Musk und Tesla für die Autobranche waren. Grund genug also, bei Eric Liedtke nachzufragen, wie Konzerne ihre nachhaltige Verantwortung wahrnehmen können, weshalb eine Minimarke wie Unless nachhaltig möglicherweise mehr bewegt als ein Großkonzern und was wir von Native Americans lernen können.
Willkommen zu Sustainable Brand Stories, dem Podcast für nachhaltig erfolgreiche Marken und Kommunikation, präsentiert von Strichpunkt Design.
Eric, most people will still know you as Adidas Global Brand President, the guy who shaped the brand in its most successful phase in the past decade. But since 2 years, you're pursuing something completely new. Can you share with us in a few sentences what Unless Collective is about and why you founded it?
Yeah, I guess it's great to be back with you, Harold. I think from an Adidas standpoint, those are some of the best years of my life. I spent half my life there at the time, and I really enjoyed myself. And you know, for a guy that loves sports and loves music and loves fashion, it was like heaven for me. So I thought it was the best job in the world for someone like me and my interest and my skill set. I left with my eyes wide open because one of the things that I came across when I was at Adi was basically the plight of the world, if you will, if not the plight of the oceans, through our associations of Parley for the Oceans and such. And it was, you know, I did as much as I could to change the trajectory of Adi at the time by fighting plastic waste. And I recognized after a few years of doing that I'd done just about as much as I could in that battle. And I thought that we needed to come from an outside-in perspective and really try to disrupt the entire industry by creating a brand new way of how we make product and how we circulate that in the system and then how we return that harmlessly back to Earth.
Let us just put in brief that you stated that the Adidas goal, or you fought for Adidas goal, to completely remove pure plastic from the supply chain of Adidas by 2024. That was sort of the mission that you had fought for, right?
That's correct. So we if we unpack that a bit, we went into, you know, the battle of plastic led by Parley for the Oceans, who came in and introduced us to the problem of plastic waste in the oceans and what they were doing to, you know, the sea creatures that we love to play with. When you went into the system of Adi then and looked at our plastic footprint overall, you soon became aware that it was massive. And the footprint of fashion, the $3 trillion industry that is fashion every year, is probably 60%, if not 70%, made of polyester, nylons, plastic type materials that all have a raw material known as petroleum. These are fantastically flexible, durable, and moldable materials. However, the downside is they are forever materials. They never go away. they just break down smaller pieces and then enter the soils, the waters that we drink, and the air that we breathe.
So even if you take recycled plastic and wear it, every time you wash it, some microfibers get into the water, right?
You know what? I mean, the truth is that recycled polyester is better than virgin polyester because the procurement of where it comes from, it's not better once it's a product. Once it's a product, it still leaches microfibers and microplastics into the system, into the water, into the air. It still becomes a one and done planned obsolescence piece of fashion. That's, you know, this DFB jersey is only good for this season because you need the next one next season and the next one after that and the next one after that. So this planned obsolescence of continual fast fashion or sports fashion or fashion in general is really driving this need for new. So even if you make something out of recycled polyester, which is better than virgin, it still ends up, you know, becoming a one and done planned obsolescence roadmap, which goes back into the ground, into the water, into the air that we consume. So to me, it wasn't good enough to just do recycled polyester or non-virgin polyester, which is the roadmap we established at Adidas. And that was the first step for many brands to go to. It's like, let's do better by not requiring new. Great, we can do that. But ultimately, you still had to reconcile the problem of what happens to you, what happens to that product when you're done with it.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something you're tackling with Unless.
That is the problem of waste is really what we're trying to solve. And that's where Unless comes in, because our thesis on that is fashion leaves a huge footprint, not just in how they make things, but more importantly, where the product goes at the end of life. And let me just unpack that for a minute. So a lot of people think that when it leaves their wardrobe, it just goes away, but there is no way. Ultimately, it ends up in, you know, third world countries. Even if you donate it to a charitable fund, there's a vintage piece to it, but most of polyester isn't great for vintage because it doesn't wear well over years. So it ends up going down cycle, which ends up going to third world countries, whether it be the Chilean Atacama Desert, or whether it be the Ghana, or, you know, these other sub-equatorial countries where we end up dumping our stuff. And Ghana imports 21 million elephants worth of material every week, textile material every week from us. And I say us because it typically is from northern rich countries. And so they're having to deal with that. Much of it is unregulated. It goes into, you know, it decimates their economic trade within their own textile industry. But then ultimately it goes into unregulated landfills, which bleed into rivers, which bleed into the ocean. So here you get this forever material that never really goes away. It just breaks down and it enters the water we drink, the air we breathe from burning it, or the soils that we grow our food from. So to me, when you're faced with that and you do the research on that, Your only option is then to try to do something about it, which is why I ended up leaving Adidas and the best job that I could have imagined for myself to pursue this full time, because that was in my heart, in my head, it was in my stomach, it was not letting me sleep well at night. And so I thought, I've got a couple chapters left in me. Why not me, with my operational background and my material background and a few friends of mine? Why don't we try to start something to make a difference and disrupt this status quo fashion? And we started Unless Collective, which is the first ever 100% plants and minerals fashion brand, from, you know, head, literally hats, to shirts, to woven shirts, to knit shirts, to pants, to socks, and now shoes. So we've really tried to pilot and be a lighthouse of a better way by creating things out of non-petrochemical materials and finding a way to solve for all those material solutions and then bring it to the consumer as a better way to purchase.
For me as a consumer, buying something from Unless means that one day when it's broken, I can put it on the compost or send it back to you where you send it to industrial composters. Is that really true? How long does it take a sneaker to decompose? Does it really? Have you tried that?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, we're always testing everything we have. We don't come out with these claims lightheartedly. We make sure we can stand behind all of them. So yes, so the simple thing is, you know, because I always try to make it the simplest story, the simplest answer is the easiest. If you make something out of plants and minerals that come from the earth and have not been altered through their chemical compounds, nature will take care of them. They will harmlessly go away. Now, how quickly that happens depends on how you want to treat it. If you want to send it back to us, we have a take back return policy. You want to send it back to us, we'll pay for the postage. We'll give you 20% off on your next purchase, and we'll make sure we industrially compost it, which means it'll go away within 30 days and become good dirt. Okay. Now, we've modeled that with thousands and thousands of pounds of material already. That happens with every single piece of apparel that we've made, right? So whether woven like the shirt I'm wearing, or whether it be a knit like your best hoodie, that will go away. Now, Harold, if you want to drop it in your backyard in Humber grains a bit. It's going to go away pretty quickly there if you properly compost it in just your normal compost. If you want to put it in your garden as good soil, it will go back to needing good soil and plants will grow from it without having any, with all being chemically neutral and positive, nutrient-rich soil. So to me, we've modeled all those things. We've got those studies. We've tested it with the University of Georgia. We've tested it with industrial compost, the largest in California, by the name of Agromin. We get nothing but thumbs up on that quality. When it comes to a shoe, it's a little bit harder because now you're dealing with a natural rubber latex, which is the primary component in our plant-based leathers and our plant-based midsoles and our plant-based outsoles. Those will also go away because we haven't altered them and used, you know, some sort of, toxic chemical like a sulfuric acid to cure it. We use, you know, with our partners at Natural Fiber Welding, the material innovator we use something called citric acid, which is like, you know, squeezing a lemon on your salad to cure things, because nature provides some of these things if you dig hard enough and you put the right research in. So they cure everything, whether it be the leather, with midsole or outsole, with natural minerals and natural acids and natural materials, allowing that product to break down. Now, our trials with natural latex from a degradation standpoint have been slower than apparel because there's not natural occurring enzymes that actually eat rubber in North America. And that's where we've been doing our trials, because if you know anything about rubber trees, they occur more in the equatorial region of the world. So I'm sure they would go away a lot faster in Amazons or the Philippines or Indonesia or such. But right now we're trialing that. It's still going away harmlessly, but it's still giving us the nutrient-rich soil chemistries, but they're not going away as quickly as we'd like. So what we do is we precondition them, we grind them up almost into dust, and then we put them in compost so they can be mixed in and still create good dirt for us.
So we have a perfect cycle, a great innovation, giving back to Mother Earth what came from it. But
we actually call it regenerative fashion now. We're trying to pilot in. We think the future is regenerative, and if we can now take our product, generate cool product, degenerate it into the ground, and then regenerate it with new plants. How cool is that? We're just plugging into how nature's designed us anyway. We're all designed to be generated, degenerate. I'm in mid-degeneration right now. And then, where we go to create new trees and stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the research, but there's all sorts of composting bodies research studies coming out in New York. I think it's passing a law that I can plant a tree on me when I pass, which is basically what I've asked my wife to do.
Ashes to ashes, right.
There you go.
Kommen wir zu unserer Rubrik zwischendrin. Quick and Dirty, 5 schnelle Fragen. Was war der Punkt deines Lebens, an dem dir die Bedeutung von Nachhaltigkeit bewusst geworden ist?
Well, I think my entire life I've always tried to be sustainable, but really the inflection point was meeting Paul Watson, Cyril Gooch, Sylvia Earle, her Royal Deepness, I think is her nickname, because she spends so much time underwater. She's a legend. And Cyril's the founder of Parley. But these individuals I was able to spend time with, and they really educated me on the plight of the oceans, the reliance our life on Earth has on the oceans and the creatures that play there. And I really started to get, this is more than just, recycling. We need to be really leaning into how we do this. And then you get into, how do we do this?
Warum glaubst du, dass Nachhaltigkeit und nachhaltige Markenführung in den nächsten Jahren wettbewerbsentscheidend sein werden?
Employees are consumers, and consumers are employees. And if you look at what the consumers and employees are talking about, and there was just a report that came out from the Paul Pullman Foundation, which talked about, employee satisfaction and, forget quiet quitting. It's now conscious quitting. If your values don't line up with my values, I'm out. So right away, you're already hearing that from your employees, which again, if you extract that to consumers, when the consumers break through the fog of misinformation, they're going to be very judgmental on what they buy and what they don't buy and how their values line up. You don't need to really look much further than every topic that's in the news or on social media every day is about railing against the issues that they care most about. And the streets are full of young people that have had enough. And I love it. And I want to be that uniform of the movement and encourage that. But I think that, you know, people that are not planning for a lighter footprint, and let's call it that, then they are planning, they're writing their own obituary.
Das Argument, mit dem du auch den ignorantesten Nerd überzeugst, nachhaltiger zu handeln.
That's a good question. And I just finished this book called Braiding Sweetgrass, which is written by a Native American lady who's also a botanist. And it's just, she combines science and traditional methodology, and it's just fascinating. But the thing that always strikes me is the indigenous people of the world always look at their legacy on the land. They always look seven generations out. How does this decision I'm making, how's it going to affect my ancestors, my legacy? How's it going to affect my seven generations from now? And I think if somebody wants to look themselves in the mirror and say, how are the decisions I'm making today, whether you're working in Frankfurt, London, Wall Street, whatever, you know, how are decisions I'm making today affecting the lives of others tomorrow? I think you would live a different life. And that's how I try and live. And I think that's how you try to live. And I think that's how we all try to live. And I think if we just remind ourselves that every decision we make has that effect on generations to come, I think you're going to live a little differently, because we all love our kids and we all love our grandchildren. And we're all going to love the ancestors to come behind us. And hopefully they've got some good stories to tell about us.
Jetzt mal ganz ehrlich, was ist dein persönlich unnachhaltigstes Produkt oder Angewohnheit? Wo cheatest du?
I think the single-use plastic unavoidability, you just can't get away from it. I mean, I've got young children, and you know, their favorite thing is to have a smoothie. Well, the smoothie comes in a plastic cup with a plastic lid and plastic straw, and I'm like, no, we're not going to have that. And then I get in this huge fight, and then I can't take a 4-year-old, an 8-year-old, you know, is screaming in my face. So it's like, and that, I say that because I think the industry has put a lot of pressure on us to clean up our lives, to green our lives. And that's great. We should green our lives to a point. But ultimately, we need systemic change. If we're going to create the change we need to see in the time we have left, we better like do a lot more than just, you know, not using plastic straws. Now, I will cave on single-use plastics occasionally. I don't try to take shortcuts on anything else that I can consciously. But I would say like the industry of petroleum and big plastic has done a great job of putting the onus on us to green our lives, when really we need to put it back on them to say, give us better solutions. And paper straws are a start, right? So I think that's where we get into, you know, how we do that. But yeah, my gluttony is sometimes I don't feel like cooking and we order DoorDash and it comes in plastic bags. Sometimes, you know, I cave for the children's needs of the moment versus the long-term needs of our planet. So yeah, we're all guilty of that. And we shouldn't feel bad about it, because what we need to do is drive systemic change and not put all the responsibility and onus on us.
Das Gesetz mit Blick auf Nachhaltigkeit, das du schon morgen auf den Weg bringst, solltest du heute Bundeskanzlerin werden.
That's super easy, because I think about this a lot. Every company that makes a product needs to have a plan for the end of its life. Because right now, all we have is waste. Well, tell me what happens to this pen when I'm done. Goes in a landfill. Well, the landfills are too full. So, like, what is the plan for the end of life for every consumer product we have? What's Apple's plan for this iPad? I have no idea, but I'm sure it goes into some, maybe it gets recycled because of the rare earth materials. But you get my point. It's like there's no plan. There's no company that I know that has a plan for what happens to when you're done using that product, except Unless Collective.
With all respect, you're still a small company, less than a dozen employees, as far as I know. How do you want to change the multi-billion industry? And in other words, where do you see the power of a small brand like Unless?
Well, I mean, I had a pretty big bully pulpit when I was at, I've always wanted to say that in an interview, when I was at Adidas, and I had a lot of fun with it, and I had a big, a big audience, big platform to communicate, you know, about ocean plastic and about, you know, our commitment to getting off of that, off of plastic. The limitation of a big brand is you're always going to be, you always can do things in a very incremental, sequential way because of the financial responsibility you have to your shareholders, which is very realistic, and we all have to play within those guardrails. from a startup standpoint, my single mission is to disrupt and to create chaos within the existing order, and to, as we talked about earlier off the air, why Nike was able to get Jordan, and because they were a startup, they were able to come in and throw caution to the wind. And that's what startups can do. Whether you're in the electric vehicle area with Tesla that came in, by the way, they didn't invent electric vehicles. They just invented a better way to bring that to consumers. Or how about, plant-based milks like Oatly didn't invent oat milk. They just created a better way and a better taste and a better solution for people to really scale that. That's what I think Unless is here to do. We're here to bring similar disruption to the fashion industry as a spark for others to follow.
Okay.
The electrification of our vehicles globally will not happen because of one brand. It will happen because that brand called Tesla made electric vehicles really cool and really accessible. And now you see, Porsche has a killer car and Ford has an F-150 that's selling it. So it's like, and now you've got this inflection point of 15% of the industry in America will quickly become electric vehicles, and then it'll go from there. So that's the spark we're trying to do. So imagine us being a lighthouse brand that's gone down every dark hallway to bring these material solutions to life, whether it be in footwear or in socks or in wovens or in knits. And now our job is to bring that urgently to all of fashion by partnering with some of the bigger brands that are out there that want and know they need these solutions, by convincing consumer there is a better way, by really being that lighthouse or that lightning strike to show an inflection point for the industry that can then pivot. And that's really our mission driven is to allow the consumers and industry to see a better way that has all the unit economics considered, that has all the scale things considered, that has all the answers ready to go because of who we are and our backgrounds as founders with our experience working for the big brands. And now we're ready to scale that very quickly. So we're in that stage right now. We've piloted all the products, and now we are offering this as a partnership to other incumbent brands, if you will.
Are there any that you can name already? I know that you've cooperation with Mammut already.
But Mammut was great. John Heiko's a friend of mine down there, and he's the new CEO at Mammut for the last year. They've leaned in really heavily. That was a fantastic first ride. But we've got several in the works right now. I don't ever like to talk about partnerships before the consumer gets to see them, because I think that just, you start to dilute the message of impact and the fun we can have. So we keep our powder dry there. But yeah, there's a lot of people leaning in, especially since the launch of the shoe, since the Degenerate came out in December. I think that was a really big moment for the industry. I mean, if you've been following this for a while, but when I was able to work with Parley for the Oceans and the team was able to make the first ocean plastic shoe back in 2015, that was like an inflection point for that movement. And it still is probably the greatest inflection point in my life, because it started to make me recognize sustainability wasn't philanthropy. Sustainability was actually good for business. And that then led into all of the things that are now ocean plastic in the world in fashion and beyond industries. And it's a whole industry in itself. I think that's what the Degenerate has done. The Degenerate has shown another inflection point to the industry. Like, we don't need to make things out of petrochemicals. We don't need to make things out of some sort of plasticizer. We can actually make things out of what Mother Nature has provided us in its rawest form.
What's your plan to make yourself seen? I mean, you have a certain popularity as a person, of course, but to have the industry and the consumer see Unless, I'm sure you have a limited marketing budget. What can you do as a small brand to...
The toughest thing about startups is you're always undercapitalized. So it's every day is a new battle, right? So I spend a lot of my time trying to think about with the team, how do we expand our audience? How do we expand our distribution? And those are the things we're focused on right now. The first couple of years was really about building a viable brand, a viable product offer, if you will, and making sure we could do that. And those took a lot of energy and a lot of resources. Then the footwear itself was tremendously difficult to model from an innovation standpoint. And we're not done with any of those, by the way. We need to perfect all those. Those are what we have in market right now is what we like to talk to as a brand in beta. So we have version one, if you will, of everything. But we're happy with the results we've done so far. We're really excited about that. But now we're going to start talking to wholesalers. We're talking to some right now that we'd like to start ranging and access their consumers we are talking, as we talked about, with not just brands as collaborators to kind of spread us to their distribution networks or their audience, but we're also now starting to entertain a lot of interested mission-led people, influencers, if you will, artists, athletes that are interested in leaning into this topic. So none of it's easy. All of it takes a lot of hard work by, you know, the 10 people we have on staff, but it's a mission that we're all convinced of, and we're selling every day. Like we're talking to you, taking the opportunity to talk to you today.
I find that that open source approach that you follow with Unless quite interesting. And it seems to me there is an analogy to your time as Adidas, where you started sort of an approach called colonial creators, inviting consumers, entertainers, athletes, partners to collaborate with the brand and make it Adidas actually stronger than it would have been alone. What I wanted to ask you in hindsight, now it lies behind us, is that that strategy also had some risk. Like, you brought, as far as I know, Beyoncé and Kanye West to Adidas, which sold millions and millions of dollars. And you, of course, know what I have to ask you now. Would you in hindsight say that it was a maybe fall to hire a guy like Kanye, which costs the brand now a lot of credibility and dollars? Or how do you see that today?
It's always easy to look in the rear view mirror and look at the time. It was a brilliant move. At the time, Kanye was Kanye was a different individual, I think he was able to provide a spark and a learning for the brand that we needed and didn't have at the time. Having said that, you know, talent management is something that's as much an art as it is a science, and making sure you work with those artists in a way that's both beneficial to them but also beneficial to the brand is first and foremost should be when you have personalities and celebrities and artists that are of that magnitude that can overwhelm the brand if you're not careful. You need to manage that very carefully, and I felt we did a good job. Remember, I left at the end of 2019. So I just want to, you know, all the stuff that's gone on since, I had nothing to do with, I was not akin to, but I cannot say with any good conscience that signing Kanye West or bringing him to the Adidas brand was a mistake. I think it was again a critical part of a growth of many things that we did. And I will also say that he taught us many things about being a creator brand. About never being finished, about never being satisfied, about always iterating and making things better and not settling for average ever. I mean, he brought that kind of attention and focus to us. Not to say we didn't have that, but that relentless pursuit of never being finished, which is kind of what he took from the way he creates music to the way he created product. And we had we built up a sample room, a proper factory sample room, in Calabasas, so he could always be in there tinkering and crafting and creating with a lot of Adidas committed people that were just brilliant at bringing his visions to life. I would never look back and say that I regret any of that. I think what Kanye has come out and said recently is disgusting. And it's not something I sign up to, and he knows that. So it's not something I adhere to, and I think that I wish the best for him, but I can't I can't stand by anything that he's said in the last year or so with any good conscience.
Yeah, you mentioned the point of managing a collaboration like that now, which is always seems to be difficult if you speak of humans, right? Like, a brand on one side, which is evolving, and a human, popular human on the other side, which is evolving and taking turns that no one can foresee, but somehow you have to live with it, right?
Yeah, I think people are interesting beasts, right? Like we all have our foibles, and we all have our issues to deal with, and I think being someone that works with talented individuals, creative individuals, let's call them geniuses at times, genius comes with a price. I mean, there's no free, there's no free lunch in life. And if you think you're getting something for free, there's a cost somewhere. And I think mentally, Let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, mental health is a real issue and today. I'm glad it's getting the attention it deserves, especially coming out of the pandemic and a lot of us being so socially removed from common interactions and living through screens and things. I think it's coming at a high cost to all of us. So I think you have to always appreciate that when you're dealing with individuals that are extremely talented and creative as well. It's like, are you listening to them? Are you working with them? Are you looking at things from their perspective? As much as it may come off as aggressive or directive or cruel at times, are you really considering things from their view? Are you looking at certain things holistically? And I'm not talking about any individual right now, but I've always tried to look and have a high degree of empathy to what other people are going through at a certain situation and try to remove my ego from the conversation and say, okay, how can we best make this work? So one of the first things I would always ask partners, before we ever did any deals is like, what do you want? What do you want from this? And what is your 5-year plan? And only then can you start to understand really why they're talking to you. Is this just a transactional deal? Because that's easy. Or is this something where we share a common vision for the world that we want to try to disrupt and do things together with? And I think that's led to the most fruitful relationships that I can mention, that I've been a part of, is really, really putting yourself in the shoes and saying, here's what I want, and being very honest with that and open and saying, here's what we need out of this. And then having them say, well, here's what we need. If there's commonality, it's an accelerator. And that's what, Calling All Creators for me was all about, is like bringing people together that wanted to create the change they wanted to see in the world, just like we did. And whether that be around, sustainability, whether it be around Black Lives Matter, whether it be around Me Too, whether it be around LGBTQ+ rights, it doesn't really matter. It's like, what is the change you want to make out there, and really leaning into that.
Speaking of change and evolving together, let's come to the other initiative that you started at Adidas regarding virgin plastic. How easy or how difficult was it for you to convince the board to support this decision? I mean, it applied turning upside down the supply chain, revolutionizing sourcing, production and design, and above all, invest a lot of money, time and energy into that. How difficult was that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think if you just walk into the board and say, we need to be more sustainable without your ducks in a row, you're not being a responsible board member yourself. I think you need to come in armed with information that is going to help to prove your point of, this builds not only consumer advocacy, this builds sales. And, that's the responsibility of the board, is from a fiduciary standpoint to its shareholders, is to continue to grow. Now, we could argue about the capitalistic mindset of that. That's a different podcast. So let's just assume that, publicly traded companies need to continue to grow month on month, quarter, year on year. Mm-hmm. Having said that, then, the easiest way to convince a board of something is that what you're doing is going to do that. So I will tell you, it was a very fast, cheap date with Parley for the Oceans to get to the 2015 inflection point where we presented the first ocean plastic shoe at the United Nations General Assembly. When Cyril Gooch and I stood on stage and presented it to the world, it was the first of its kind. And then we took that as good marketers and we pushed that into the world, and oh my gosh, the
incredible the response, right?
Right. So it was going back to our friend, it went as far and as wide as anything we ever did with Leo Messi or Kanye West or Beyonce. So to me, I was like, okay, now I've got my ammunition. This builds advocacy.
Okay.
Now would you walk into the board and say, this is not philanthropy, this is good for business? And by the way, they're all like, yes, let's do this. And so then you have to be responsible and say, okay, now we've got our ocean plastic partnership with Parley. We're going to build these capsule collections and make them really cool and high desire, scarcity. And they were as cool as anything we did with streetwear or anybody else. Then you said, okay, but how do we get off of virgin polyester? Well, that's a different conversation. If we go back and let's assume Adidas's footprint of virgin polyester was 70% of its clothing and shoes at the time. So you can't just say, okay, now we're going to switch everything to ocean plastic from one day to the next. That's a 95% premium upgrade between, recycled polyester to virgin. The price fluctuates based on demand, but last time I checked a couple months ago, it's a 95% premium. That's a hell of a cost to pay from a cost of goods standpoint. So what you need to do was set a plan up with your global operation teams, with your sales teams, with your marketing teams to say, we're going to take, you know, we're going to take small bites of this elephant until we get it done, which is why it was important to put up there in the upper right-hand corner of your whiteboard, 2024, we're going to get 100% recycled polyester. And that, I think we set that in 2017. So now we take the bites, bite, and then you get to where you want to get to, but you've got to have a destination in mind. You've got to be armed with the advocacy, and you've got to absorb that premium price in small chunks, because okay, only when can you mitigate it across the rest of your profitability of the rest of your range to ensure that you're still producing the results you need to. And that was not just good for business. That was good for employees, good for consumer advocacy, good for everything. So I'm proud to say that they're still doing it today, from best of I can tell.
How far have they come? Do you know that?
What's that?
How far have they come until today? Do you know that?
I don't know that. I'm sure it's in their annual report. I don't know Bjorn's commitment to the cause, but I think it's just about done anyway. So I mean, I think Bjorn, if you look at what he's done at Puma, was unbelievably successful in building a holistic sustainability strategy.
Moment mal, eine kurze Zusammenfassung bitte.
Erstens, im Konzern hat man einen großen, großen Hebel. Das ist logisch. Als Startup hingegen hat man Beweglichkeit, also die Freiheit zu radikalen Ansätzen wie beispielsweise jenen, seine Klamotten komplett aus Pflanzen herzustellen. Genau das ist Anlass gelungen, und weil Anlass damit aber nicht in seiner Startup-Nische glücklich werden, sondern wirklich etwas bewegen will, hat das Startup einen interessanten Open-Source-Ansatz gewählt. Konkret, die Marke bietet ihre Lösung anderen Marken zur Nutzung an. Erste Kooperationen mit Mammut hat es bereits gegeben, weitere sollen gerade in der Verhandlung sein, wir werden also sehen. Eric spricht davon Ignition, also Zündung oder Zündfunke. Im Idealfall will Anlass nicht die größte Marke der Welt werden, sondern ein Zündfunke für die Modeindustrie sein, so wie Tesla es mal für die Automobilindustrie war und die Elektrifizierung vorangebracht hat. Für Littke ist das übrigens gar nichts Neues. Bei Elias hat er etwas sehr Ähnliches getan mit einer Strategie, die damals Calling All Creators hieß. Diese Strategie vergrößerte die Wirkfläche der Marke um ein Vielfaches, indem Eric Kooperationen mit Stars wie Kanye West oder Beyoncé schloss oder mit der Umweltschutzorganisation Parley for the Oceans, die für Adidas fortan Plastik aus den Meeren fischte. Die Reaktionen auf diese Kooperationen waren so gewaltig, dass Eric sogar den Vorstand überzeugen konnte, binnen 7 Jahren komplett auf Neuplastik zu verzichten. Ganz einfach, weil es gut fürs Geschäft war. Das war ein Move, den Eric heute nicht mehr ganz unkritisch sieht, weil er nicht den ganzen Weg zum Ende ging. Es blieb ja halt immer noch Plastik. Und es gibt auch berechtigte Zweifel, ob Adidas diesen Weg nach Erics Weggang so konsequent fortgesetzt hat. Aber damals war es für einen 20-Milliarden-Konzern ein gewaltiger Schritt. Was lernen wir daraus? Mit den richtigen Business-Argumenten und den richtigen Partnern bringst du sogar den konservativen Vorstand auf deine Seite. Für Sustainability ist das eine verdammt gute Nachricht, finde ich. Hör mal aber weiter.
Tui, as a guy who's very working with brands all of his life, general question, what is a brand's role with regards to sustainability? What can a brand contribute to a company's sustainable goals and efforts, or is it just a sidekick of the whole thing?
I think brands that aren't diving into value-driven, purpose-driven propositions are just, you know, writing their own obituaries. Okay. I think the world is at a place now where we need change and we need it urgently, and we're expecting not just the public sector to lead us in that discussion, we're expecting the private sector to lead us in that discussion. And I firmly believe that, a brand needs to own a sustainability strategy. It needs to be embedded in everything they do, from product to marketing to sales to operations to supply chain, et cetera. And it needs to be, driven from the CEO. It's not just philanthropy, it's good for business, and it's critical that brands start to take responsibility for their footprints that they leave behind. And I think that policy is also coming. So the pressure is building both from a consumer transparency standpoint, but also from policymakers getting tired of footing the bill when brands continue to, you know, to do what they want and not worry about what happens to that product when they're done, when it's done being used. It can't just keep going to landfills. It can't just keep going to third world countries. Everything is up to its gills. You've seen the visuals, the pictures are out there, the data is there. We're drowning in our own waste, and the brands need to take responsibility for that. And if they don't, they're going to start to be punished. And you know, you've seen the French Act, French Fashion Act, the New York Fashion Act's coming, California Fashion Act's coming. The EU's running more policies where people have, where brands have to show they have a circular design built in. So all of this is happening behind the scenes from a policy while you have consumer pressure as well. So it's coming to a climax.
Okay. You said it's a topic for the CEO. There's a tool called CMO's Barometer by German agency Service Plan, and CMO's Barometer last year sees sustainability as the top trend for the marketing offices. From your perspective, is it a good sign or a bad sign that CMOs regard sustainability as a marketing topic?
It's a great sign. I mean, I think the CMOs need to be on board, but if it just sits with the CMOs, it still needs to go a level up. Because, I mean, ultimately, it used to sit with the CSOs, Chief Sustainability Officer. Now, great. Now the CSO is, you know, collecting all the data and reporting on it, but operationally, they're normally not able to get things done successfully. Now, there's exceptions. There's great companies out there that are they're really empowering the CSOs to make great change, and I don't dismiss their role in making the change, but it used to sit there, right? As a corporate position. Now it's great that it sits with the CMO. That's fantastic to know that it's sitting with the CMO, because that means the storytelling into the marketplace will incorporate this. Great. But if it's just story, then you get into the label of greenwashing, or better yet, green wishing, which people are like, oh, look, it's sustainable. But how? I mean, sustainability is as we've talked about before, and in an earlier interview, it was like, it's kind of like, well, I've asked three questions about what do you mean by sustainable? So just saying sustainable is not good enough anymore. So the CEO needs to own it, because he's got to write it into a strategic business plan that says, this is where we're going as a company. This is the role, you know, product has. This is the role sales has. This is the role global operations has. And this is the role sustainability has for all of us to make that into, you know, an accelerator. And I'll just, my muscle memory from Adidas was, we picked a fight with plastic, and that was hardwired into the strategic business plan called Creating the New. And that meant the employees were free to innovate and really unleash their creativity on how we could do it. So all of a sudden the ideas started firing at us. Like I just gave permission, and then everything came from there. So we eliminated all of our plastic bags at stores. We eliminated all plastic products in our offices. We eliminate all of our plastic beads in our beauty care. We eliminate plastic everywhere we could find it. And there's no way that someone like me was going to find all the areas of plastic. Once you allow the employees, who, by the way, are very passionate about making a difference in their lives and making the world a better place, to find plastic, hunt it out, and replace it. I mean, hangers at retail, fixtures at retail, you know, everything just went, it went like this little snowflake on the top of the mountain became an avalanche. And that is what I mean by having a holistic plan. It wasn't kept by the CMO with, you know, doing his marketing stuff. It was part of everything, and everybody ran to it and put their hands in the fire to make it better. And that was one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen.
Just have two more questions on brand stuff. Today, brands like Alness or Adidas or others can still position itself with their sustainable stance. But as you see, more and more brands try to do so, or you pretend to do so. So what happens next? The consumers will be more confused, and it's harder to position yourself with an USP that as a sustainable brand. So is the future sort of a grayish, diffused future where everybody calls himself sustainable, but 10% are or so? Or what is the path that brands should take who take it this mission for honest?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise. Everybody knows that people care about sustainability. You know, every research that comes back says people care about sustainability, and so there's a lot of people out there screaming sustainability, and it gets really difficult. Again, if you're trying to be a startup, because you know now you've got to bid on search terms. Now you've got to, like, you know, really get in the trenches with the powers of Sheins or, you know, these other incumbent companies that are huge and have huge money. They just buy up all the terms, And then they'll say, yeah, we have a sustainable capsule over here or something little over here, but they're not holistic. So it's a real issue with the noise, and especially in fashion where there's no real governance, policy, certifications that you need. There's no third party that's validating something as organic or something like that. So there's a lot of, you know, I don't like to use the term greenwashing because it implies complicitness. But I would say green wishing, where a lot of people, especially at upper management, don't really realize that it's not what they say it is, and it's not as good as they say it is, and so there is a lot of noise, and I wish I had an answer for that one. I'd apply it immediately to Unless, because we're a brand that holds yourself to a higher standard, but yet we may not always get credit for that because there's so much noise around us that people can just, you know, there's a lot of people saying, hey, it's plant-based. And it's like, but it's only 20% plant-based, but they can still say plant-based. Well, that's why we always have to say we're 100% plant-based. You know, right. like would you eat a vegan burger if you're a vegan and it's only 20% vegan? It's like, no. Like, so there's standards in other industries. There's no standard for our industry. So we hold ourselves to a higher standard, but we are, I think, being punished by that, by the trend of saying sustainable. And so we use every opportunity to get our message out, like opportunities like this, the platforms like this, where we can tell people that there is a difference. Even if you try to make a 100% cotton t-shirt, the Federal Trade Commission in America will allow you to say it's 100% cotton, even if it's only 85% cotton.
Oh, really?
It tells the collars, the closures, the inks, the dyes, they can all be plasticizers or petroleum based. And the FTC doesn't really care about that because they care about trade. They care about whether we're putting duties on the proper product. So they want to have a majority. So they care about the base material. Where we take special attention, these nuts are these buttons are from Corozo nuts. You know, this ink is water based. You know, these threads are linen. So we have to go through all these extra steps, pay the extra cost, pay the premium. But then you have somebody next to me saying, well, you can get a $20 t-shirt for 100% cotton. It's like, no, you can't. I'm sorry, but the consumer education needs to come along, I think, and really look and hunt for the right stuff and ask the right questions. But it's hard. It's not as easy as I'd like, which is why us leaning on partnerships and things going forward to try to accelerate our platform and our audience is going to be critical for our growth.
Hey Harald, ich brauche kurz was zum Mitschreiben. Was sind denn die goldenen Regeln der Nachhaltigkeitskommunikation? Was sind die wertvollsten Learnings?
You know, if you're going to drive sustainability into an organization, it's got to be owned from the top. I mean, the top has to own it. It has to be holistic. It can't be one department or another department or a third department. It's got to be one plan. Picking a fight with plastic was that our attempt at Adidas. And it's got to be driven from the CEO because this is where we're going. You have to have a destination in mind. And everything you do needs to add up to it. And then the storytellers, the CMOs, need to then make sure that's a very simple story to get to the consumer and to tell themselves. Because story is the thing that makes the difference. Like, what is the story you're going to tell yourselves as a brand, as a company, internally? So employees can go, and they've got families, they've got friends, they want to go brag. And that's one of the greatest things I found at Adidas is when we did the ocean plastic, people were very proud to be wearing stripes again. It was like, no. This is what we're doing. We're making a difference in the world. We're different than the other guys. You know, we're in this for profit, but we're in it for good as well. And that becomes a rallying cry for recruitment as well. So from the top, holistic story.
So after a lot of cynical questions, one positive one. Having said all that, where do you see Unless in, let's say, 10 years from now? If we met again in 10 years, where will it be and where will plant-based fashion be in 10 years, realistically?
Well, I think there's two questions there. I think one is Unless and one is plant-based fashion. I think Unless is creating, has raised the bar on plant-based product and based fashion so that it can never go away now. People see there's a better way. They've seen the solutions and now it's just accelerating. Just in the last 3 years of us working on, you know, building our product, we've seen unbelievable advancements in plant-based glues, plant-based leathers, plant-based solutions in general, because people see this decomposition, compostability promise of natural circularity. So we may be the first, but we certainly will not be the last. Now, in 10 years from now, I believe plant-based fashion will be the standard alternative to petroleum. We just need to get past some inflection points. So we've worked with innovators to provide a full suite of solutions. Now we take those solutions and we start to partner with other brands. Because again, we're interested in creating the disruption that the world needs to see and creating systemic change within this $3 trillion industry. We're not really fixated on, oh my God, Unless needs to be the next 5 billion company. I think that's the difference between us and maybe other startups out there. We are interested in creating a change that's critical for the world's health and well-being and all of our and our children's, you know, life ahead of that. We want to do that as urgently as possible, and that's why I really highlight the fact that we've created not only a material suite of solutions, we've also created a supply chain suite where we know how to print and dye it. We know how to put it together. We know how to distribute it. We know how to collect it. We know how to put it in the ground through industrial composting. And we know how to take that good dirt and make new plants out of it. So we've done this regenerative creation model that we now offer to others in the industry that we recognize need it, just like Parley did with Adidas back in the day, but they may not be able to build it on their own. So now we partner with them to create these solutions so they can take it to their audience and their distribution. So to me, yes, there'll be an Unless business model there as well, but it'll be a different model. It'll be about empowering other brands to take our solutions with them. And that can be through partnerships, that can be through cost of goods, that can be whatever, but that's the Unless solution ultimately for the industry, which is Unless certified for compostability. And that's where I think the standalone brand will be what it's going to be, but really the legacy of Unless will be in creating a certification of compostability and allowing others to get there through our regenerative creation model.
Last question, which market share do you see plant-based fashion, let's say, in 10 years or so? You said it would be the alternative, but the alternative can be small or big. What is?
No, I would say, like, you know, just taking a page from plant-based proteins or electric vehicles, if plant-based fashion can get to 10%, that's an inflection point. Then it starts to cascade and the domino effect gets going. So I would hope there'd be enough interested parties to get there, to get to 10% of the industry. And I think we have to start in smaller parts of the industry. So let's say 10% of the sports industry, if it's being done by that, would be a huge call out, and then it can accelerate from there. But the $3 trillion industry that it is, footwear is going to be the hardest to get. So I think 10% of apparel and then footwear coming on, you know, as the innovations still need a lot of work on you know, the outsoles, the midsoles, the glues, the leathers, they all need a lot of work. So 10% there, I don't think we can scale fast enough in 10 years, but 10% of apparel is an easy get. And again, I'm talking about pure plants. I'm not talking about just cotton as it sits today, as a blend.
Und schon sind wir wieder am Ende angelangt. Ach Harald, ich vermisse dich jetzt schon. Wenn es euch auch so geht und ihr auf eine weitere Marke Lust habt, die ihre nachhaltige Mission konsequent verfolgt, hört in Haralds Gespräch mit Johanna Perret rein. Johanna ist Markenchefin bei Recap, einem Rosenheimer Startup. Und ihre Mehrwegbecher und Bowls findet ihr mittlerweile bei IKEA, Shell-Tankstellen, Burger King-Filialen und fast 22.000 Ausgabestellen bundesweit. Damit sind sie binnen 7 Jahren aus dem Nichts zum Marktführer geworden. Wie die Marke das geschafft hat? Hört selbst rein, Link in den Shownotes. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Und wenn euch gefallen hat, was ihr gehört habt, dann abonniert uns doch und verpasst keine neue Folge. Bis bald, liebe Hörerinnen, lieber Hörer. Und bis bald, lieber Harald.